are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
The reading this morning comes from an excerpt from After the Good News. Author is Nancy MacDonald Ladd, a UUA minister. Some measure of estrangement may be part of the human existence. We may not be able to banish it altogether any more than we could cultivate carefully studied moral perfection. Tillich thought that we were always pulled between our dependence on others and the astonishing hubris that compels us to place ourselves at the centre of the universe. In the tug of war between estrangement and mutuality, the race may never be fully run. Still, this does not mean that we should simply stop moving. Just because we are honest doesn't mean that we cannot be hopeful. Hope, after all, is not a version of optimism. Optimism tells a preordained narrative. It is an assertion that the scales have already been tipped towards triumph. Optimism is always busy absolving somebody. Hope is different. Like faith, hope is the exact opposite of certainty. It does not presume an outcome for good or ill. It lies in the waiting moment when the tug from both directions is yet not fully resolved, and when a great deal of many things is possible. It moves in humble spaces that open when we allow ourselves to be uncertain and thus not fully self-contained. It is the possibility, though not the inevitability, of a better way. Hope does not require ease. It does not require naivety. It is real, tangible, and enduring. Even after the good news has all been declared, even when the authentic stories of our lives do not have a fairy tale happy endings, middles, or ends.
Thank you, Marcus. I think we have that book in the library here at church, and it's worthwhile. It's a small publication, but has some really wise words of wisdom in it. We come into this fellowship from a world in which many of the everyday happenings and conditions of life threaten to crush us with an overwhelming sense of futility and worthlessness, particularly in this COVID time. We have come jointly to refuse to let each other be cast down by its tragedies, its pain, its injustices, its brevity, its uncertainty, or its unpredictability. We are here to help each other create a framework within which we can together pursue a positive way of relating ourselves to life, to value it in all its forms, to find it meaningful, and to serve it with all our heart, mind, and strength. So what does it mean, living life holistically, or atonement? Another one of those things that I've heard decompose the word atonement, at-one-ment. Holistically, of course, doesn't refer to living a holy life. It means living each moment of each day or staying in the moment. Pretty tough thing to do, though. This is accepting life when you're living in atonement and living life holistically in all its incompleteness, and also accepting the fact that we all have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And as I've told many people during my time of counselling, we're given one bag of goodies at the beginning of this life, and that's your bag to deal with. Can't change it. What you've got is what you've got. And if you can get to the point where you can accept that, then I think and believe that you're on the path to actually living life holistically. According to the wisdom of Christine Mason, there are three certainties in life: birth, space, and death. Many would add taxes to that, of course. We all know that there are those who have found to avoid ways of paying their taxes, but they surely are a part for most of us. When Christine spoke to me about that, I thought space, and I asked her about that, and she said, well, we all take up a space right from the time we're born, and we are custodians of that space until we depart. And I thought, I've never ever considered that. We all understand that the only way to enter this existence is by being born, and that the nature of that process is not one-size-fits-all situation. You can think of the various ways that people come into this world. What about space? Well, that finishes with our death, doesn't it? And there you can see the age-old image of the Grim Reaper coming to get us, and maybe being charmed by a small child offering a gift. I'm not sure if your experiences concerning conversations about death are the same as mine, but it has been my experience that most people are not very keen to discuss the topic, or if they do, it's not something they want to discuss at length. The one exception to this, I think, is the latest bill that's just been passed in Parliament allowing euthanasia. And I think that sparked people into perhaps speaking more about death and an end of life. Naturally, there are factors that play a part in this discussion that we might have, such as age, health, and the life experiences that we've had. Perhaps also the place of birth and the living conditions of the individual come into that. When we're young, death is usually thought of as something a long way off. And of course, sadly for some, it's not. We all hope for the young ones that this is the case. Even growing old is a dim possibility to the very young, or at least it was to me. I remember singing and dancing to the Beatles tune, "Will You Still Need Me, Will You Still Feed Me When I'm 64? And that seemed to be way over the horizon. But from my reality and reflecting on life, it goes very quickly. And I heard of somebody whose last words were, "It's all gone so quickly." And then he died. The naivety shouldn't surprise us, the naivety about death. As we ponder car accidents involving drivers, which can often seem to involve reckless behaviour, leading us to use the phrase, "Oh, those people think they're bulletproof." In my teenage years, I felt that I was bulletproof, especially when driving Dad's V8 car and seeing if I could get it up to 100 miles per hour. But the sudden death of a close friend from a tragic accident when I was 18 was a wake-up call. He was killed in the worst peacetime naval accident in Australia's history. Life has a way of challenging us in unexpected ways. As we move through life, the concept of death becomes more concrete for many, rather than being an abstract idea. Jung explains this life's journey as akin to the movement of the sun in the day. So imagine at dawn the sun rises and is able to light the land as far as the horizon. Then as the sun climbs higher into the sky, its light spreads across the landscape and so much more is revealed. The sun appears to us to continue its journey moving towards the west, and the area of land in its light diminishes, and eventually its light is gone. However, it is often not what happens at the moment of death and what possibly might happen at that end of day or end of life, or what might happen after death, that concerns many, but rather that period prior to being designated as old age. Jung devoted a lot of attention, especially in his latter years, to an articulation of the problems and opportunities of old age. He again was one of the first psychological thinkers to see the positive dimensions of ageing, while still acknowledging the presence of debilitation, loss, and discontent. He wrote, "A human being would certainly not grow to be 70 or 80 years old if this longevity had no meaning for the species. The afternoon of human life must also have a significance of its own and cannot be merely a pitiful appendage to life's morning. As I'm aging, not because I have more time, far from it, I find myself more concerned about the effect of aging of my body, which decreases the things I have previously been able to do. And I also have time to think more about, perhaps, what precedes death rather than the experience of the final act of death, or what, if anything, lies beyond death." Jung and others, including Robert Jurek in his book Seeds of Hope, state that for us to live holistically, we must come to terms with the fact that we are going to die. However, from conversations, reading and observations, it would appear that this is only a part of living holistically. Something that can create more anxiety is the consideration of what might be the challenges prior to that experience. Questions very often not expressed openly include, what will I have to endure? How will I cope with that? How will others, particularly loved ones, be affected by the way I deal with the process before death? Will I be a burden on others? Anxiety is a byproduct of these thoughts and is one of the factors that brings about depression in the aged that then diminishes the ability to live holistically. As we know, anxiety and depression are not confined to the senior members of our population. Anyone can be affected by worries, anxiety, or depression and find them debilitating, and that they diminish the individual's ability to live holistically. Anxiety may be based on irrational fears. A fact is that we are challenged to live with risks every day is something we often don't think about. For example, how many of us came by car to church this morning? We all did. The risk of dying while in a vehicle is far greater than the risk of dying in a plane crash. I wonder if you had the choice, which one would you choose? And which one of those scenarios raises the most fear about it? Just the words, car crash, plane crash. The thought of dying in a car crash isn't something that we constantly think about when we're driving. Thank goodness. Naturally, the amount of anxiety raised by these thoughts varies from person to person. If we allow ourselves to dwell on these anxieties, they debilitate our ability of living our lives to the fullest. Barnum of Barnum and Bailey, circus fame, stated that life is a banquet, but most people, he didn't say people, he said sons of bitches, starve themselves by holding on to their fears and insecurities. The challenge then is how to deal with this situation. How do we develop a more holistic approach to this journey of life and living? The starting point, I believe, is the same as all of our challenges in life. We have the choice of approaching from a position of fear or a position of love, with the hope that we will be able to cope with whatever comes about from that challenge. A good example of this is Robert Lee Fulgham. He's an 85-year-old American Unitarian minister. When he was turning 85, he decided to write his version of the American Declaration of Independence. His declaration was a personal one about the manner in which he would approach the rest of his life, and it contained 10 points. I'd just like to share 5 of them with you this morning. He wrote, "I declare that it is true that life turns out best for the one who makes the best of the way life turns out. The key is improvisation in the face of the unexpected, which is always to be expected. A better name for that is surprise. I declare that not knowing is the doorway into surprise and amazement. Ignorance is not failing. It's a ticket to ride. I declare the truth that if there's no rain, there are no rainbows, that the lotus blossoms only grow out of the mud, and that there is no shit, If there's no shit, there's no Shinola. Shinola is a defunct American brand of shoe polish. It was popular during the first half of the 20th century and entered the American lexicon in the phrase, you don't know shit from Shinola, meaning to be ignorant. I declare a moratorium on worrying about how things will finally turn out. Soon enough, I will be what I once was, no one and nowhere. And I have been there before. No problem then, no problem now. Jung says, we lack concrete proof that anything of us is preserved for eternity. I declare the truth of the contradiction that I am forever alone and also forever as much a part of the universe as the most distant star. But I'm not alone. I hear laughter. I guess the message is, don't become too concerned about the journey ahead, no matter what your age. Live in the present, dealing with what you have to deal with at that particular point in your journey. Fulgham's idea about life and death is that I once was no one and nowhere. Doesn't have to be ours. It's his own personal belief. After all, we're all on our own spiritual journey and entitled to our personal views about what occurs at the end of life as we know it. What happens after death remains one of the great mysteries of life. Fulgham's attitude towards what he believes happens at the end of life is a great example of being confident about your own ability to meet the challenges that will come. Moving forward, determined to live each day that lies ahead to the best of our ability, knowing that we are not completely alone on this journey, and being open to the help and guidance offered to us along the way. The hope that he would be able to live by these declarations underlines his resolutions. One of the biggest challenges for me, and I suspect for many others, is to maintain awareness of what we are doing at all times. What does that look like? I wonder if you'd be involved in some activity, but not consciously aware of it. For example, driving a car and your thoughts drift off on other things. Once read a book called Holy Cow. An ABC journalist went on a ashram in India and they had to sit, they weren't allowed to talk, they had to sit and meditate for hours and hours. And when she'd start concentrating on the meditation, and then every time she got started, raindrops keep falling on my head was a tune that would come into her head and it play over and over and over. And Grant didn't know that when he played this morning. Just one of those things. I wonder if it's like that for you when we meditate here, where you're meant to be going into a deeper space and yet the brain or mind kicks in and plays something over and over and over. I've read that Buddhists practice staying conscious in the moment by eating one sultana slowly and focusing on each bit and motion of the mouth, chewing the sultana, as well as the flavour, and finally, the act of swallowing. I've tried that, but obviously not enough to bring about an overall ability to keep my focus in whatever is taking place presently. But I can live in hope that the more I practice living holistically, staying in the present, that the better I will become at doing so. But what is hope? The reading that Marcus gave us this morning outlined that. And I like the way that it takes it away from optimism and it mentions hope and faith. I don't believe that hope is something to do with a Pollyanna type of faith, that everything will work out the way we want. I believe that to have hope is to want an outcome that makes your life better in some way. It not only can help make a tough present situation more bearable, but also can eventually improve our lives because envisioning a better future motivates you to take the steps to make it happen. And if you look at the COVID situation at the moment, if we all gave up hope that one day we wouldn't have to worry about travelling somewhere without being locked up or shut down, or that we could go and get a cup of coffee with somebody in the church, or we could sing quite openly without thinking we're going to infect everybody. If we lived without that hope, how would we get through it easily? Everyone hopes for something, but hope ought to motivate us to take the steps to make whatever we are hoping for happen, and that's why it's important to listen to the medical authorities and follow their guidance and direction on how to get through. And as Jenny said today, we've got to practice those things of social distancing and caring about each other enough to protect each other. Coupled with this actually working towards things must be the thought that if it doesn't happen the way that I would like it to happen, or we would like to happen, there is a possibility of something good coming out of our efforts that we hadn't considered when we set out to achieve the goal we were aiming for. Now, I'm a born worrier, so much so that my mother once gave me a fridge magnet with the advice, "Don't worry, pray." The question that came in my mind was, pray to whom or what? I find meditation is a powerful way of releasing the self from the mind and developing the habit of staying in the moment. So, just for a moment or two, let us take time to meditate. So make yourself comfortable. I'll read something first and then give you some time to meditate about it. Meditation for hope. You may be going through a time in which it feels like the price to pay for hope is too great. It feels way too expensive. But what's interesting is that even more expensive is to lose sight of hope. We need hope like we need air. And yet we don't consider the price of air until it's gone, until it's difficult to breathe. In this way, hope and air are linked. Where do you go if you can't find hope? What do you do if nothing is working? You build a space for hope. You construct the space. Maybe it's a favourite space that you've visited or seen. You beautify the space. You create the space that will one day welcome hope in. That's all you can do, preparing for hope. And then when least you expect it, hope appears. It's the flower that was never truly gone. It's just something you couldn't see at the time. Create the space for hope and then invite it in. I hope that you were able to start creating a space. My space is something I've had for many years. It's a scene down at Victor Harbour. It's a place that we used to take the children when they were very young, up on a hilltop looking out over the sea. It was a perfect day. The sun was shining. Little white caps on the waves, seagulls just sweeping around through the air. Very peaceful, very calming. And that has helped me. One particular situation I'll share with you was in the dentist. I grew up in an age when we didn't get anaesthetic when they ripped our teeth or drilled our teeth. And so I had an abject fear of going to the dentist. And as soon as I could hear that whirring of the drill, my knuckles would turn white. But after having been taught to create a space that I felt safe in my mind, I would go to Victor Harbour and I'd recreate that, I'd reconstruct it in my mind. Well, it helped, that's all I can say. So it's worth trying. In closing, I'd like to leave you with this quote from an Irish author that Christine introduced me to. He's also a poet, philosopher. His name is Aaron Carra, and you can find plenty of his stuff online. But the one quote I'd like to leave you with this morning is, "You can't control what life throws at you, but you can control your attitude towards it." The benediction this morning, a short one, "We all emerge from, dwell within, are transformed by, and called back to love. May your mind be humbled before this mystery. May your heart grow hopeful by it. May you be sustained by this love always."
Well, some things in life are bad, and they can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. But when you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.
If life seems jelly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling down in the dumps, don't be silly chums, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Just look on the bright side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow. So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath. Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show, keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. So always look on the light side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank you for your audience tonight. And we can particularly recommend the Unitarian coffee you will partake of in 5 minutes. I have nothing of any meaning to say anymore, but just to do a little bit of scatting. Come on, cheer up. Boo doo 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 do